let us encrypt this because you want to look in. You are giving a backdoor to every miscreant also wants to look in. And that's a novel thought, though, that there was a big push early on that all telephony equipment should have backdoors for the government. And they didn't really get the fact that any backdoor is usable by government. They said, oh, well, we'll make sure that we're the only ones using it. And the IETF early on, actually, sometimes the IETF has a sense of humor. So RFC 1984 was an example of the IETF saying, no, backdoors are helpful to a much wider variety of, and that, you know, it took 20 years, but we're finally getting there on that. So let me do a little bit of structural overview, and it looks like I'm actually on time. So it looks like we are going to have, like, so the first line here should make people laugh, that we really, there are no members of the IETF. There is no actual structure. The IETF is not a corporation. One of the reasons ICANN is a corporation is they looked at that and they were like, no, that's never going to work. But the IETF still is not a corporation. We have meetings, there's working groups. I'll talk a little bit about the working group. Working groups are formed in areas. I'll talk a little bit about areas. So the next couple of slides will cover this. But and the ISG, I'll talk about the ISG. That first line, there are no members, is actually very relevant. Because when I say, oh, there's a working group on this topic, a working group means a mailing list formed and, you know, has a little bit of adult supervision, but anyone can be part of that. And if you are part of a working group, you're part of the IETF. Now, many people are part of many, many working groups at the same time. But there are people who care about one topic. They don't really have time to work all of this, but part of their job has them interested in one topic. They are as much an IETF member as someone like me who follows 15 or 20 work. They're as much of an IETF member as me who has been a leader in a bunch of working groups. The fact that I am leading a working group doesn't make me a special member, because there are no members. Here's a picture of what I just said on the other slide. You'll notice that a lot of these bubbles are not connected to it. So it's not a hierarchical organization at all. The place where there is a little bit of hierarchy is the ISG, which I'll cover. Remember I said that there are seven areas made up on the slide, and each area has working groups. Notice that IANA, the RFC editor, all of that, there is not direct ties. So it really is pretty loose. There are very good agreements, and you'll see when, at the end of my talk, I will talk about agreements between the IETF and ICANN. There are good agreements, but given that the IETF doesn't exist, there's no contract between the IETF and ICANN. There are very strong agreements. Now, the IETF is covered by ISOC, and I'll cover that in another slide, but it's not like the IETF corporation is going to make an agreement. There is no such thing.
I will take this opportunity to say that we will have a survey for people at the end of the tutorial to provide comments on how Paul did or am doing. Yes, and also if any thoughts you all might have on additional tutorials I'd like to see. So please do respond to that survey. Thank you.
I'll be putting the URL up on the screen at the end of Paul's presentation.
So this was actually a good place for me to take a little bit of drink of water, because ISOC is a real corporation. They're a nonprofit. They've been around since 1995. They are the corporate home for the IETF, but that, again, is somewhat loose. The IETF is not a subsidiary of ISOC. ISOC funds the IETF and helps other people fund the IETF, because the IETF, you know, gets contributions. They come through ISOC. ISOC actually, even though the internet well before 1994, ISOC pretty much came into existence when it turned out that the U.S. government was going to stop funding secretariat that made the IETF work. And someone said, oh, we should have a nonprofit and such like that. So ISOC got formed. It's a wonderful group. There's only one slide on ISOC here, but if you are interested in the sort of social side of the internet, promoting the internet for users, the whole bottom-up thing, definitely look into ISOC. Great group of people, and you can ISOC.org. The important thing here is that the IETF does need to be funded. I mean, to have three meetings a year, only part of the IETF's funding comes from meeting fees. The rest of the money comes from ISOC. ISOC, you know, so ISOC is really the center of that. ISOC has a full-time staff person who is in charge of making sure all of that works for the IETF, but that's voluntary on ISOC. ISOC's mission, which is bigger than the IETF's mission, is to help the internet thrive in many ways, particularly the technical. Love ISOC, give them good props. And by the way, you can join ISOC also without paying any money. Funny how that idea sort of like started to spread around. So going back to some of the sort of upper level stuff of the IETF, remember that in the picture there was the IESG, which had all the working groups underneath it. Over off the side is the Internet Architecture Board. And I know some people here think that IAB stands for Internet Advertising. This IAB preceded that IAB. So the IAB is not like a parent, not like a parent. It is more like sideboard where, since the IETF is doing engineering on specific topics, you want a group of people sort of looking at the engineering that's going on, both technical engineering and some of the policy engineering, and that's the IAB. They give advice. They don't get to overrule. Because the IETF, who doesn't exist, needs to have liaisons with a bunch of people who do exist, and those people sort of freak out when you say that, oh, no, they're really, the IETF doesn't exist formally. The IAB does all of the liaison stuff. So every time that the IETF needs to send a liaison message to, for example, to ICANN, goes through the IAB. You'll see a number of IAB members here at the meeting, you know, due to all the CCWG and IANA transition stuff. The IAB folks who are doing more of the work on that. They do the IANA registry, you know, so part of the reason that IANA exists is as a registry for the IETF. The IAB is the one who oversees. The IAB also oversees the RFC editor, because you want to have a good editor in place. You want to have good processes in place for your publishing. So the IAB does sort of all of that. And sometimes when appeals happen, the IAB is one of the places in the appeal. Of this slide, I would say the most important thing for people in this room is the middle point about that the IAB selects the IANA registry operator. So far, that's been ICANN, and I have a little bit of example there. But that is a choice that's made by, quote, the IETF in general, but the IAB in specific. So now let's hop back to the IETF. Here are the different areas. I'm going to have sort of the next slide will explain some of this more, but some people say, well, what does the IETF do technically? So there are seven areas: application in real time. So applications such as HTTP, applications such as FTP, some of the applications that you know are all done in that area. And real time has taken over so much that they put their name as part of this. So things like SIP. Now, many of you are noticing that you can do video conferencing right web browser these days. That's all from the ART area. Internet area is for things that are on layer three, things such as how do devices talk to each other when they're, you know, without talking through applications. Operations and management. Operations is very, very important on the internet. Props to the people who are running it. The IETF doesn't make standards for the operators, but they let the operators gather to say things like, this is a large concern, or this protocol that the IETF produced is really hard for us to run as operators. We want, you know, more operational advice. So right now, the DNS work being done in the IETF is mostly being done actually in the operations. Not like we need new DNS work as much as we need more work operations. So the main group that's doing DNS work in the IETF right now is the DNS op working group. So the operations area. Routing or routing, depending how old you are. Some people still call it routing. Most of us call it routing. How do the packets move around? Hugely complex, horrible stuff. But without it, the internet would be one-tenth the speed that it is now. So routing is still very, very important. Security area, something that I've been active in for the last 20 years. Once you are having some communication, what kind of security do you have? Can you make it better? Can you make it pretty much so that you are absolutely sure you know who you're talking? Can you make it so that you're sure that no one else can see your communication? Security area has been very, very important to the IETF from the very early days. Transport, basically there's sort of a catch-all for many things, but congestion, at a single point is a transport issue. So, for example, many of us are staying in hotels, and we notice that the Wi-Fi in our hotel is terrible. It's usually not terrible because of the size of the pipe. It's usually terrible because you have 40 different people at the same time coming through the pipe and sort of fighting with each other for space because everyone's trying to watch a video at the same time or whatever. So it's not just a size issue, but it's also that's what happens in transport. And by the way, I'm grossly simplifying a lot of this. The general area is rarely used in the IETF. It's usually for policy. But policy does come up in the IETF, and you'll see why when we start talking about the IANA transition. So each area has area directors. These days, there's usually two or three area directors, depending on the area. What an area director in the IETF does is sort of have overall planning power, but not necessarily veto. So, for example, if there is a topic that might be in multiple areas, the area directors will agree. It is the area director's responsibility to set up the working groups and also to pick the working group leadership. It is a very important part of the area director's work to shut down working groups. Lots of working groups are like, oh, no, we're not done yet. And yet we all know, you know, that if you leave a bunch of people working well past their best by date, they will keep doing work, and it will be like more and more fragile work. So it's the area director's responsibility to go, nah, you guys are done. And one of the things that area directors do is they actually read all of the document standards for all of the IETF, not just their area. It's a very, very important responsibility because during review, and we'll talk a little bit about review in a slide or two, during review of documents, areas will ask really hard questions that no one asked in the working group because we all understood the topic. And some area director will say, well, do you think about this? And the working group will go like, no, that's a very good one. Hold that thought. We'll be back. You know, they go off, do more work, and then they come back. It's very, very valuable. So one thing that the IETF is well known for is the products of the IETF better review than in many other standards organizations where the review is done just by, that's where the area directors come in. So all the area directors together, that's the Internet Engineering Steering Group. The IESG is the gang of the area directors. So they do some process management and such like that. They do approve the working group charter as a whole. So an area director can't just create a working group on their own. They have to also take it to the IESG, although it's usually accepted. But fourth bullet is really important, which I was just talking about. They review all of the tech buy, and they approve the RFCs. This is, again, some people are sort of skeptical about the need for this. By the way, area directors in the IESG are not paid. They're paid by the IETF does not pay its leadership, including the IETF chair. Whoever is the IETF chair, which is pretty much a full-time job, had better have funding from somebody else because they aren't going to last very long without eating. But if you are an area director, you get $0 from the IETF. You get no travel funding from the IETF. And this has become a little bit contentious because that means some people are qualified to do this, aren't able to do it because they can't afford it. Being an area director is about a 60% or 70% time job. So not that many companies are willing to take some of their best engineers and say, sure, we will lose 60% of your time for the next 2 or 4 or 6 years to help the internet. But some companies do. This is really important. If you're an area director, this is not like a stepping stone to some long-term job. In fact, sometimes area directors end up area directors because their company says, no, we're having financial troubles. You don't get to do all of that all the time. But this really separates the IETF from a lot of standards organizations. Most standards organizations pay their leadership. The IETF doesn't, which makes sense because if the IETF doesn't exist, what are they going to pay with? But the IESG is a very, very, very important group, and it's volunteers. Just like, remember I said earlier, any of you can be participants in the IETF. You're not going to get paid to do that. You're not going to get any travel stipends. This is all volunteer. So let's talk a little bit about working groups, because if you join, which would be lovely if you did, I'm going to take a little bit of a wing here. You're here at ICANN. You hear about bottom-up. There's some questions about how bottom-up. The IETF is extremely bottom-up. That is, as I said, you can join. Your work can be done in a working group. That's it. That's how bottom-up it is. The work in the IETF is done in working groups by volunteers. The community forms itself. So if you have a great technical idea, you find the right working, try to convince them that it's a good idea. Or not necessarily that your idea is a good idea. Topic is a good idea to work on. So there's a huge difference. Of course, being an engineer, you might think, oh, yes, I know the right answer for this problem. You may not know the right answer for the problem, but you might have identified a really interesting problem. So part of the work in the IETF, where people are need to be open and why we have working groups and not just this document gets published way, is you want open discussion of ideas, very, very bottom up. So working groups have charters. You may come up with an idea for which there is no existing working group, and your idea might be important enough to warrant a charter for that specific idea. Or you may have pointed out, might have a group of things. Each working group has a chair who sets agenda and such like that. But basically, for example, I'll pick an example that isn't that relevant. IPsec is one of the ways that VPNs work, and something that I've been working the last 15 years. You might be an IPsec developer. The IPsec working group has been around forever. You come in, and you actually have a problem that we haven't dealt with before. And we look at it, and we're like, oh, right. That's how you participate. The working group goes, yeah, yeah, okay, you're right. We need to deal with it. Now, you may have a proposed solution, and it might be a good solution or it might be a bad solution, but you brought a problem in. We're going to work on it. We're going to have a solution. So that's where working groups come in. Some work is done outside of working groups. You might have a problem and a solution. There is no working group currently, and that can still flow through the IETF process. That's more rare. But working groups gain and lose active members all the time. For example, in the DNS world, a new engineer gets hired by a DNS-related company. They come in, they start doing stuff, and they have an idea. They're there. Or somebody's working on a while, it's like, oh, God, the IETF is the hardest place to work in and stuff like that. I'm tired of this. And they go away. No one ever notices other than the fact that they aren't posting. There's no, like, I'm now part of this working group. So once the working group does something, it goes through this sort of process. You can see the very light green line. Notice that in the top bubble it says standards track document. That's what I was mentioning just in the last slide of not everything has to have an individual document that you take to an area director and say, I would like you to sponsor this. But that still starts up here, find a sponsoring AD, or if it's a working group, it's going to be the AD that goes through last call, and it goes through IETF community review. Note every piece of work that is standardized in the IETF, every topic goes through that large bubble. So you may be a DNS expert, but you have an opportunity to comment on every single piece of work coming through. You may have a side hobby where you care about routing, or you used to run routers, now you're doing DNS and such like that. You might actually review all of those documents, and you might say, hey, nothing to say during the working group. I didn't even know that working group existed, but I'm reading this document, and it says this here? That's obviously wrong. And everyone goes like, oh, right. Okay, we'll get back to you. This is where, so you'll see that this line goes that way. That doesn't always go that way. It could be that it goes up and down on the left-hand side a little bit. This is really one of the strengths of having a bottom-up open group is that people can appear there. Now, normally it does follow the line after comments and suggestions. They're usually more minor. Goes to the ISG. ISG says, yes, this is good enough, although they usually kick things back. And it goes to the RFC editor and gets published as an RFC. I would say 90% of things in the IETF, no, I would use 95% of the things in IETF community review get no comment, no one pays attention, or if they do, it's all sort of editorial and they don't bother. But of that 5% that get comments, a fair number get way back. Some of them get axed. Someone says, you said the problem was this, I agree with the problem, you said your solution was this, here's why your solution doesn't work, and I'm sorry, I don't have a better solution. Goes back to the working group, and they're like, oh, right, we don't have a better solution. And so what you get is a problem statement with no solution. That's still valuable. That's very, very valuable to folks on the internet. But, yeah, you know, you're in trouble. So let me go through the standards process a little bit here. Actually, we've sort of covered this. I'm going to skip over the slide. The formal review, we just covered a little bit more here. And again, the biggest, most important thing here is the IETF wide last call is everybody, anybody. You don't even have to be active in a working group. You can do nothing other than follow the mailing list that says when an IETF wide last call is, throw in your comments. On time, I'm going to skip a little bit of Russ's slides. A little bit on the bottom-up stuff. You know that there's a nominations committee here in ICANN selecting the board. That's modeled after the IETFs. Basically, to get on the IETF nomination committee, you have to have shown up at a couple of face-to-face meetings, meaning you've probably gone away, and you're chosen by random selection, literally. Maybe there's 10 slots on the NomCom, and there's usually like 100 or 150 people who say they would be willing to nom, and they run a random number generator to pick the The idea there is that you don't only want choosing, you actually want people who know the sort of social aspect of the IETF also choosing. And then, but pretty much the NomCom works like the NomCom does. Let's get a little bit into, and I want to catch this before we take questions. The next couple of slides are really about things that the IETF does that overlap with at ICANN. So the IETF has the IANA protocol parameter registries. These are registries that were originally set up by the IETF before there was even a thing called IANA, preceded the thing called ICANN, where, say, there's a protocol that there's a bunch of extensions, and each have to all agree on the number. Somebody has to say, number 14 means this, and usually fairly boring stuff. This has always been done by someone called IANA, the Internet Assigned Numbers, assigned numbers authority, thank you, right, which was, it's really not an authority because they don't make up the numbers, they just assign them. So the middle bullet says in years this function has been done, you know, through an agreement between, a formalized agreement, an RFC number, between ICANN. What this slide doesn't say is for 20 years before that 15 years, it was done by this, but he did it wearing an IANA hat when he did it. The guy's name is John Postel. But so for 15 years, this has actually been a formal function, an agreement, a memorandum of understanding between the IETF and ICANN. So in the last, with that MOU, things have happened where people have said, oh, we want to make sure that this set of registries is updated at a certain speed, you know, like happens at a certain amount of time. Some registries need to be up more often. So that MOU has sort of evolved over time. But in fact, for the last 15 years, this has worked just fine. So here are some example of protocol parameters. Probably half of the standards that the IETF produces needs to have something done by IANA. Sometimes it's a registry that's only going to have two items. It's expandable, but no one ever bothers to. But we still need to have that. So there's an example here on the right of HTTP error codes. Sometimes when you go on the web, you'll 404 or something like that. Those are all numbers that you want to be stable. So 404 means not found. You always want, a browser always wants to know when it gets something that says 404 back, that's what it means, or 403. And so there's references for all the RFCs and all of that. There are probably, I don't know if it's, this slide says thousands of registries. Yeah, probably over 1,000 and less than 2,000. And IANA, pretty much part of the agreement with IANA is that they'll just say yes when the IETF says we want a new registry for something that, like, not almost no one cares about, but the people who care about it care about a lot. IANA says, great, here's a new registry for you, and we will. But going back a slide here for those of you who are NES folks, an example of a registry that's important in the DNS space is in DNSSEC. As you know, DNSSEC, or as you might know, DNSSEC, you can use different signing algorithms. You want to make sure you know which algorithm was used on each thing. So each message has an algorithm number. Those numbers go into a registry like this. So that would be closer to what we're. But lots and lots of protocols have protocol parameters that need registries. So the way that this happens really is that the IETF makes the policy that says, I want a registry of this sort. The IAB provides a little bit of oversight so that the IETF doesn't go crazy, and IANA implements it. And there's never been a problem with IANA implementing. Pretty much IANA is very good at just saying yes. So the bottom thing is 35-plus years of experience with the structure. Again, ICANN's only existed for 15 of those 35. Before that, there was an IANA, and again, it was mostly a guy, and at some point, like maybe in 1990, got like a part-time staff person to help him out with that. But IANA itself really has existed for 35-plus years. ICANN has been running function for that for the 15 years that ICANN has existed. So getting back to, you know, what's happening this week, there is the stewardship transition. I'm not going to cover this in detail here, believe me. But the big picture here is the U.S. NTIA had a say in this when it happened 15 years ago. We thought that was a good idea. Now we don't, and fortunately the U.S. NTIA also doesn't, so the question is how do we transact that? This is one of the things that happens in the IETF. We make a policy, we make a protocol, it's running on the internet for a while, and they're like, no, we need to make a change. Sometimes change is easy on a protocol, sometimes very easy. Sometimes it's very difficult. As I in the slide I gave before, HTTP2 took more than 15 years after, even though during that 15 years, people were like, oh, this is sort of broken. Oh, it'd be nicer if we did this. Same thing is true here. It became clear at some point that the NTIA being part of all of this was not being all that helpful. NTIA ended up agreeing, and yet here we are many years later dealing with the stewardship transition. So let me give you a quick overview of the how the IETF is to have this happen. And by the way, there are some dates here. The last dates here are possibly going to change this week. But basically, first thing, there was the Memorandum of Understanding. There was a working group in the IETF called IANA Plan for how do we plan for this. IANA Plan met. They got community consensus in the IETF on the plan for how to make the independent function. After the community agreed, the IESG looked at it. They made some improvements, again, with the community. Then the ICG got formed, which also has input from the numbers folks and folks. Who are not IETF related, and then this is all going to go to the NTIA. Along the bottom, you'll see that there is the service level agreement that was agreed to early on. There's going to be a new one, but basically this is how it happened. The important part of this slide really is the fact that the IETF community got to review the output of that working group. The IESG got to review the output of the community discussion. That all came to a head and came out with where we are today. So this is mostly a historical slide because the IANA Plan Working Group really isn't doing anything anymore. And again, it's going to be a working group that can close by itself, right? It doesn't need to last forever. So most of the work of the working group was finished earlier. There's going to be some niggling going on when some of that plan changes. That will go through the working group again and go for IETF consensus. So here is the proposal for the parameter registry, how it will shift over. The last line here is the last draft that was being worked on for how to make that happen. And again, I'm sort of zipping through this because if you're not interested in this, which is just fine, you don't need the details. If you are interested, you're going to get a whole lot more detail from other folks. The most important part of this is, again, IANA started as an IETF function early on. The importance grew over time, but IANA became important before ICANN even came on the scene. Since ICANN has been on the scene, it's been doing all of the IANA stuff. This is where we are at now. So, giving a little bit of time here, there's a little movie here. I'm going to show you the movie. It's about 2 minutes long. It's put together by ISOC, by the way. And then we'll be ready for questions. Magic of YouTube. Infrastructure to keep it growing. Oops. And smooth, collaborating to design. Well, through the magic of YouTube. There we go. Let me start that over again. You won't mind an extra 20 seconds.
Infrastructure to keep it growing and running smoothly. That's why we need the Internet Engineering Task Force, a global organization of volunteers collaborating to design standards that provide the infrastructure for innovation on the Internet. The IETF is open. Open participation, open processes, and open standards. Today, because of the IETF, we can do so many things that take for granted. Emailing colleagues, instant messaging friends, and making phone calls to family all over the Internet. Email and Internet addresses can use different languages, and we can be more confident in the information we access the Internet. Tomorrow, because of the IETF, more people will have an address on the Internet. Joining the 2 billion of us already connect means more people communicating and collaborating on new ideas. New ideas like an Internet of Things, connecting devices in your home and beyond. A smart grid that links everything from your thermostat to medical devices. Imagine all of the things the Internet will connect. Your car, your appliances, and your mobile devices. The IETF is open to you and your ideas. Support the Internet. Support the Internet Engineering Task Force.
So that was the last slide. I'm happy to answer questions. We still have about 10 minutes left. Send me questions later. And I also included Russ Housley, who had given the presentation before. I verified with him. He's still happy to answer questions. So that was a lot of information.
Yeah. I'm going to go here, and then I'll come here.
Okay.
The desk mics work. Great.
Thank you. Thank you for the excellent presentation and that lot of insight into how IETF and other standards organizations work together. My question is, I want to have more clarity on how does other standard organizations like IEEE, W3C, ISO, and International Electrotechnical Commission, IEC, decide works amongst themselves on what standards to work on, and how do you sort it out amongst yourselves?
Very good. So I can't answer the question of how do they pick what they want to do, but the question of how do we sort among, how do the organizations agree on what to do, it's actually quite difficult because different organizations have different membership structures. Some of them are, they have financial incentives for trying to bring work to them. Some of them have an inability to take work from the IETF because the IETF is unopen. And so there are many organizations that can only take work they can copyright themselves. So the IETF with the RFCs, anyone can have access. So there are some organizations that literally cannot take IETF work as a beginning. So it's actually quite complicated. The W3C is an example of one where it's actually quite easy. W3C and the IETF work together very well. The IEEE and the IETF worked very well. IEEE is electronic specific engineers. These are people who work on things like making Ethernet work. And so there's a lot of standards in Ethernet, such as Ethernet security, things that happen in the wires, not sort of, how do you make the wires talk to each other? IEEE and IETF have an extremely good relationship. I can't even remember. I mean, there's been a little bit of contention, and it gets solved within a few months. Some of the others you mentioned, like the IEC, ISO.
And ISO.
All of these organizations have liaisons. Some of the liaison relationships are active, some of them much. ISO is one because ISO has so many different activities. Some of the activities are very well coordinated with the IETF. Some of them, not so much. And usually the coordination happens almost by accident. ISO has done some work, and someone says, hey, this could have been done in the IETF. And then there's some coordination. Or the IETF starts doing something, and an IETF participant says, hey, I'm on the ISO or group that's doing this, and we're already doing this. And then everyone, so it just sort of catches up. So the high-level answer is through liaison relationships. The liaisons don't always work that well. So we do, sometimes we get overlap of work. Hopefully that answers, that's the best we can do. And how other organizations choose their work, that's all over the map. I saw some other,
Thanks for your presentation.
Sure.
It was mentioned in the movie that IETF has done some work regarding Internet of Things.
The Internet of Things,
and also sensor networks. What's the contribution of IETF regarding Internet of Things, sensor networks, or constrained devices? Because I think you mentioned regarding IoT areas such as application, internet security. Mm-hmm. I think it's a cross-cutting concern that cross-cuts all these areas.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. So the IETF is not at all a central point of work on Internet of Things. Internet of Things is one of these things where lots of companies started their own work, and then some of it got standardized and some of it didn't. Hello, someone is checking. Maybe don't do that. Yes, that was guy. Russ. There we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Russ Housley.
Yeah, right. So Russ, who was not giving this presentation, that was the person who we heard. That was weird. But now you know why he's not in the room. But going back to your question on Internet of Things, so one of the things that sometimes the IETF does is lay down groundwork for things. So the Internet of Things, basically everyone who's doing Internet of Things is doing things with IPv6. IPv6 wouldn't have existed if the IETF hadn't spent a kerbillion of very difficult hours making IPv6 work. But the IETF is actually in a very minor organizational or Internet of Things. Some of the security stuff is happening in IETF. Some of it's happening in IEEE. Some of it's happening in IoT-specific areas. How that affects ICANN will be sort of interesting because we are not expecting Internet of Things objects. We're not expecting your refrigerator to necessarily have a domain name. But we don't know that it won't. So that could be something that actually back and affects ICANN. We do know that your refrigerator is going to have an IPv6 address, if you let it. I'm not sure I'm going to let it. In fact, I'm sort of leaning quite against it. But those addresses are originally assigned out of pools that ICANN controls. ICANN gives addresses to the RIRs, the RIRs do. So some of that comes back here. But it doesn't necessarily go through the IETF. There are four or five working groups in the IETF that are dealing with IoT. Most of them are, in fact, about security, not about isn't it wonderful. And by the way, this actually goes back to your question of how does the IETF work with other groups. We're having a really hard time working with the new IoT SDOs, because they're very new, they're very private. Some of them, in fact, pride themselves that you can't do their standard without being a paid member, and you can't then expose what it's doing. So the IETF doesn't work really well with groups like that. So we're having an issue on that. Other questions? Did I see? Sure. Go for it again if you. Yep.
Right. On the two points that you mentioned, one was on the IAB. So is IAB. So I understood that the IAB members are appointed by the NORMCOM and are overseen by the ISOC Board of Trustees.
Yeah, ignore the overseen. They're really not. It's from the NORMCOM.
So, but it is not open for anyone, the individuals like IETFs, that anyone can join IAB directly?
Correct. No, the IAB is a group that is selected by NORMCOM. There's 13, one of those two numbers, of people there, but it's not like open group. Now, having said that, the IAB, in fact, has projects that they work on. Some of their projects are in fact, open. That is sort of like a working group. So if a project is open, you could just go and work on it. But in general, the IAB, because it is architectural advice, doesn't have the same structure. Anyone can become an IAB member, however. You know, NORMCOM looks through people, and you don't have to be an IETF old-timer to be an IAB member.
Related question, second point on the IESG, where the area directors that you mentioned have to allocate 60-70% of their work time and are not paid by IETF.
Right.
And they have to rely on the funding from the sponsor organizations. Does that not limit the availability of good resources to be part of this? And secondly,
absolutely,
does it not lead to capture by the, you know, MNCs that can well pay these individuals? Should it not be an open process?
Yeah. So it absolutely leads to only people who can afford to be on can be on. That is absolutely, and that's been a problem forever. Even when it was only 30-40% of your time, that's still more than most of us can just say. And even those of us who have a full-time job, this is my boss sitting here, if I said to him, hey, they want me on the IESG, and it's only going to take 30% of my time, he still say, that's 30% of your time. No way. You know, that's a perfectly reasonable response. So that causes a problem. Fortunate, IETF is fairly bottom up, so that even with a somewhat limited group of people who can be in the management, doesn't prevent work happening, because the IESG might pick going to, you know, which working groups exist in charters and such. But they generally say yes if that there is a real problem that is has a real solution. So they are not necessarily that much of a gating, even though, as you point out, it's going to be a limited number. One of the things that's been important on the IESG is that they rarely have more than three people from any given company on the IESG, even if there are qualified people. Cisco has been a big supporter of the IETF, and they could fill the IESG. They don't. And in fact, it's usually fairly important if there's a couple of Cisco are financially valuable to Cisco. They have some of their competitors on the IESG. So, I mean, that, you know, money intrudes on everything. Heck, we're here this week. But that's how the IETF tries to deal with it, is still keeping bottom up.
And is IETF trying to change that?
Some people would say yes. I would say no. We've sort of given up on trying to change that. You and I talk more about that later, because, of course, we would love to, but, yeah. And then we're almost out of time if you want to
play. One comment related to that. One of the IESG members is actually an ICANN employee. Yeah. The guy who's responsible for the operation of the LRoot server, Terry Manderson, is an IESG member, and a good percentage of his time is dedicated to supporting the IETF in that way.
Yeah. So that I can, in fact, step to, and I'm sure I would have loved to hear the discussions between Terry and his boss when he was nominated, because it's like, oh, my God, we're losing this. But the value to the Internet is huge. And if you think about, well, let's say that the IETF had a whole bunch of money just to pay these. Well, then you get captured regular people. They're not the most, you know, you have to sort of balance both of this. So we're out of time, and the next starting. Thank you for coming. You have
a little bit of housekeeping. If you wouldn't mind, before you leave, just head over to this URL. It'll take. We're looking for feedback. We want to continue doing these tutorials. We want to make it relevant to you. Please let us know how we're doing with it and what we could be doing better, or come up with some new ideas. So, if you leave the room and you don't go, you'll never go to this URL. So please just take 2 minutes and go there and give us some feedback. We're going to start again at 11:15 with Alain Durand and Internet Networking. We're here all day, so if you guys got the day, please send it with us.
Actually, we're here all week, so if you had questions or whatever and you see me in the hallway on this, feel free to grab me. Thanks.
Thank you much.